coming back from the pandemic, every opportunity that sort of came my way was a scary one that I did not feel fully ready for. But there is a thrill to living life that way, because there's almost like a less of a reliance on yourself and more of a reliance on the benefits of growing. I'm really trying to lean into not resisting that and to accept that, because it hasn't really led me astray. It's been incredible.
Hey there, and welcome to Goodversations, an interview podcast highlighting inspirational voices in the theater industry. Thank you for joining me on this lovely October Tuesday, or whenever you might be listening to this episode. My name is Alexandra, and my guest today is Broadway's very own Corey Michelle Pettinaut. A phenomenal dancer, singer, and actress, Corey is known for bringing her firecracker energy and meticulous work ethic to everything she does. Her Broadway credits include Aladdin and Moulin Rouge, and she is currently starring in Chicago the Musical 8 times a week here on Broadway. You will hear us talk about so many different things, from survival jobs to making her Broadway debut by being literally rolled out of a carpet, to how the industry has, or in some ways hasn't, changed over the last couple of years, to what impresses her the most when she meets a new co-star for the first time, and of course, all things Chicago. Corey was wonderful to talk to, and I'm just so thrilled to share this with you. If you enjoyed this conversation and think more people should hear it, then please give us a follow and share this episode to your Instagram stories, which is actually the easiest way to support us. And of course, don't forget to tag @Goodversations. Corey, welcome to Goodversations. I am so excited to have you here. I first saw you in Moulin Rouge on Broadway, and from where I was sitting, you were directly in view for some of the big dance numbers. And I just remember watching you and thinking, wow, the grace, the strength, the talent, the power in your performance. I was just mesmerized by it. So I am beyond thrilled to have you here today.
Oh, it's so nice. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
And I guess, should we jump right back to when this first started for you? When did the arts first start speaking to you?
I feel like performing and dancing was always just in my DNA from a very, very young age. But I didn't start any formal training until I was 13, which is kind of late for most dancers. Most little ones start when they're like 3 or 4. But I was playing sports. I was playing basketball and tennis and all of that. So I had a late start. But at the time when I went into dancing, I really wanted to be a ballet dancer. So I didn't start with musical theater, you know, not realizing that for most ballet dancers, it's like they don't go to college. They start auditioning and they're doing ballet companies right away. And I knew that was definitely not going to be my path. Mm-hmm. I went to New York University and studied dance. And there I really kind of got my mind expanded into more of the modern dance scene and downtown modern. And because I kind of hopped around in terms of what I wanted to do as a dancer, I feel really grateful now at this point in my career, because I feel like I was able to get exposed to so many different types of dance very early on. I was auditioning and hustling and doing the thing that New York City dancers do. Like I had, 5 bajillion jobs and just like trying to survive. And I then started looking into I wonder about Broadway musicals. At the time, I'd seen quite a few musicals, but I only thought that the only musical I thought I could be in was Lion King. So that was pretty much the only one I was auditioning for. I was going to their ECCs every 6 months. And I was like, this is going to be, if I'm going to be on Broadway, this is going to be the show that I'm going to be in. And I just continued to go to those auditions over and over and over again. And got to know people. During that time, I got an agent. I ended up going on tour with The Color Purple in the midst of that time as well. When I got back from going on tour, that's kind of when I sort of committed to, I'm going to try to get an agent and really try to do this thing.
Yes.
And Aladdin was like, was my Broadway debut and such a wild dream come true that I couldn't actually even believe happened.
That's incredible. One thing I actually want to touch upon before we go into Aladdin, which I really want to talk to you about, you mentioned those survival jobs, and I'm always so curious to know, like, what was like the best one that you had?
Yeah, I think the best one that I had is kind of, they're linked together because I got the second one because of the first one. So I was working at Lululemon, and at the time, I don't know what it is now, but at the time, Lululemon was like a very difficult job. And a lot of performers really wanted to have the job because number one, like you got a big discount on the clothes and it was like a very cool, hip, I mean, it still is, but it's very, the brand is very different now than it was then. And so that was number one, but also they paid for your classes. So like if I were to want to take dance classes or fitness classes or whatever, every employee, or at the time they called them educators, I don't know what they call them now, received a stipend to go towards paying for class. And that was a huge selling point for me and for a lot of performers, because it was expensive to take class and to have a whole separate budget outside of your hourly salary to be committed towards being able to take whatever classes you wanted to stay in shape was such a huge draw. And so I had been applying for that job for a long time and hadn't gotten any calls. And when I finally got a chance to go in for the interview, I was so excited and I got the job and it was amazing. And they had like a big culture there around goal coaching for the people who were working there and talking about the things that you wanted to do. So it felt a lot bigger than just like selling yoga pants. And actually, I ended up meeting the founder of Flywheel while I was working at Lululemon. I had never taught fitness before, but I was really excited to kind of understand it. And they both were such incredible opportunities for me in terms of growth and communication. But I always talk about teaching fitness because it is such a great way to get to meet people and to engage with people. And it's so fun. And it's actually a really, really great job for dancers and performers because it is performing. Like it's just another version of it.
For sure. And I know a bunch of people who work at Lululemon now and and they love it. And, you know, to me, it sounds like low-key, like a cult sometimes.
Sometimes. But that's why I say it's transitioned. It's like, I mean, you know, there were parts of it that I was like, huh, I don't know if I'm going to do that, but
yeah, for sure.
I'll do the goals and I'll put them on the wall. Like that feels like a safe place for me to be.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that's amazing. You know, building your own community and meeting people, I think it's huge. Going back to Broadway and making your Broadway debut in Aladdin, I'm always so curious to know, like, do you still remember that day of, you know, stepping in front of that full Broadway house audience? And like, what did that feel? What did you think?
Totally. I completely remember it. And, you know, it's interesting because I mean, I feel very fortunate in my life to have been able to originate 3 shows, and just performing for an audience that large was new for me. So even before we got to Broadway with Aladdin, just performing for the first big audience in these gorgeous costumes and singing these songs that I grew up with, like it was just such a magical thing. And when we got to New York and to be able to have that experience be with this big splashy Disney musical, and also like a good portion of the people in that company are still very, very close friends of mine. It was such a special time. And I just, I laugh now because I think about it often when I was having my debut and my entrance onto stage in Aladdin is being rolled out of a carpet. And I would be like, you know, how ironic that I'm like making my Broadway debut by being like lugged on stage and then pushed out of a carpet and like popping out, surprise. Yeah, it just was really special. Like there's nothing like Disney magic in so many different ways. So to have that be connected to such a special time in my life, I feel really grateful.
That's awesome. But how do you hold on to that spark now that you have quite a few shows under your belt?
It's a great question. I mean, for me, it's always been about the work and growth. I love performing, and I think I always will love that because it's just so innately built into my DNA. But ultimately, I love the craft. I love the art form. And so oftentimes you will find me at Steps on Broadway or Broadway Dance Center. Like, I'm always taking class. I'm always trying to expand and grow and get better. And also, I've just recently started teaching a lot. And that has been really helpful for me too, to sort of reignite. I think being around young artists who are in the middle of that hustle is really inspiring, because it just reminds you that there are, first of all, the talent out there is just unbelievable. So that's number one. But number two, it just kind of reminds you of how far you've come.
Absolutely. And what are some of the ways in which your life has changed in the years, you know, since your Broadway debut?
You know, I'm a parent now, and I am, you know, doing 8 shows a week consistently over now. I've been working on Broadway for almost like 11 years now, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, 8 shows a week has its own challenges and is a very different life than the audition life. And it's also a very different life than if you're doing like a regional job or something like that. So it just takes a lot of, for me personally, taking class and teaching and surrounding myself with that energy really helps me continue to want to be a part of the community.
That's a great way to put it. And I think just having a myriad of interests and projects and different things to jump in and explore and do, I think is, you know, for me as well, for someone who is not in the industry, you know, I, in my own life, try to do that as well, just because, you know, you cannot make this one job your entire life.
Right.
Healthy. And it just ultimately, it doesn't advance you either. So
totally.
So that's really great that you do that. And, you know, you kind of just mentioned right there, seeing all this new talent and also having been on Broadway for like 11 years now, inevitably in all of your projects, you've had new castmates come in and old ones depart. And that brings new energy, new personalities, new kind of ways of working. So when you meet a co-star for the first time, like, what most impresses you?
That's such a great question. I've actually never been asked that question before. I think what most impresses me is someone's work ethic. And I think it's because I am such a workhorse, and I pride myself on taking a lot of care about what I'm bringing to the table as a performer, because I feel very, very fortunate to be able to do this job. And I know that it is not an easy job to have, and it's not an easy job to maintain. And so I feel a lot of pride around what I'm doing every day. And if I feel like I can't bring everything that I have to my performance, then I need to not be there. And so when somebody comes in that has a level of respect for what they're doing and for their craft like that, that automatically is going to get me, you know, excited, because it is really exciting to perform with people who match that level. And I think then it ultimately always culminates in a great show, because the audience can feel when people really want to be there or when they don't want to be there. And it's so interesting because with Chicago is the first time that I have ever come into a show and been that person, like been the person, the new girl or the, you know, the replacement. And it's been really cool because, you know, because Chicago has been around for so long, there are a lot of people who have been there for a really, really long time. And it's really incredible the conversations I've been able to have with people who've been there double digit years and how much they still really love doing the show.
Awesome. And I definitely want to touch on Chicago for sure in this conversation. But I also want to know, just stepping back, because before Chicago, a couple of shows back, you were in Moulin Rouge. Is what we kind of talked about at the very beginning. You were obviously incredible there, and talk about work ethic and commitment, because I could really see, and no doubt you guys have off days, and you know, it's, I'm sure it's not always 100%, but when I was there as a member of the audience, I 100% thought that everyone was there showing up, which was just incredible. So how did that project come your way?
It came my way actually kind of roundabout. And it's funny when I think about a lot of the projects that I've done in my life, a lot of them, it was never really like a straightforward path. And Moulin Rouge was just the same thing. I had actually been introduced to Sonia Taye when a friend of mine from college, her name is Jen Freeman, and she was dancing with Sonia with her company. And Sonia was creating an evening length work for New York Live Arts. And she was looking for two more dancers to add to the cast. And Jen recommended myself and another friend of mine. And she was like, oh, Sonia wants to meet you. And like, she, you know, is interested in possibly like auditioning you for this project that she's doing. And I was like, oh my God, Sonia Taye, like, oh my God. And so basically they rented a studio at Ripley Greer, and myself and this other person who's a really great friend of mine. We came in and we did like a private audition for Sonia for this particular project, and we were both hired. And that's how I met Sonia. And she reached out to me and told me that she was being considered for Moulin Rouge as a choreographer. And what they ended up doing with this particular situation, which I don't know if it's usual. I feel like back in the day, they used to do this a little bit more, but they were having basically auditions for the choreographers. I think they were being given a week or 2 weeks. I don't remember exactly what it was, to create a few numbers and then present them to the team. Wow. And so Sonia asked me to do that. And I was unable to do it because I was getting ready to leave Aladdin to go and do Roman Holiday out of town. And I had just committed to doing that. And it was happening during like the first 2 weeks of rehearsal for Roman Holiday or something. And I remember being so devastated because I was like, oh my gosh, like Moulin Rouge, this is going to be amazing. And it's Sonia. And I can't believe I'm missing this opportunity. And I'm just so bummed. But, you know, I'm just going to go and I'm going to do this other show, and maybe it'll come around, back around. And then during the time while I was out in San Francisco for Roman Holiday, they had auditions and I was unable to go to them. So I missed the auditions and I was just like, I guess the ship has sailed. And then at a certain point, they did have auditions that I was able to go to. And I went and I was being considered for Le Chocolat at the time. And I think this was before the workshops. Yeah. So I had been in those auditions for the Lady M auditions. And they were learning very different choreography than the ensemble. And then at the last minute, they decided to put me in with the ensemble, final callbacks, but I had not learned any of that material. So I was scrambling, trying to learn things in the room for that final callback. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is literally my worst nightmare. Like, everybody has been working on this material for the entire week, and I'm coming in on the last day trying to figure this out. And I ended up not getting the workshop, and I was devastated.
I can imagine.
I subsequently went to do a regional gig. While I was out doing the regional gig, they messaged again, can Corey come in? I couldn't because I was out of town. And so I was like, great. I really just feel like this isn't going to happen. And then I came back to New York City and I was doing In the Heights at the Kennedy Center. And in the middle of those rehearsals, they sent an email being like, is Corey interested in this job? And they're like, okay, can she come during her lunch break? So I went over the course of 2 days during my lunch break over to sing for them. And then I finally heard at the end of the week that I had gotten the job.
It was meant to be. And like, how long were you with the show from, you know, from workshops all the way to when you left the company?
Well, we went out of town in 2018, right. And then we opened on Broadway in 2019, and then the pandemic, and then reopened in 2021. I guess like probably a total, like if not counting the pandemic, it was probably like two and a half years. But the pandemic just kind of threw a wrench in the middle of all of that.
In that time, actually talking about the pandemic, like did the pandemic change your outlook on the industry or your job in any way? Or was there anything you realized in that time, perhaps about your own self?
Definitely. I mean, first of all, I found out I was pregnant in the middle of the pandemic. So that like completely changed everything for me in so many ways. And I felt really grateful that I had that to focus on, because there were a lot of things that were really sad about that time period. But you know, I think about it so fondly, specifically because of the fact that I knew I was bringing life into the world, and I was so excited about that. But yeah, it definitely did change a lot of things. And it's been such an interesting and sometimes challenging transition back into the business now, because I do feel like a changed person in terms of my perspective on a lot of things, and also in terms of my perspective on what I want to tolerate from the business and what I don't want to tolerate anymore. And it's been challenging, honestly, because there are a lot of parts of the business that I don't think are conducive to living any sort of life that I feel a lot of people at the very, very top get to experience. Even something as simple as just a little bit closer to a balanced life of having a family and what that looks like, and having the support from your job to do that, to have a family. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things, and there were a lot of conversations around, you know, what these creative teams were looking like, and people of color and women and all of that. And, you know, unfortunately, I feel like we've kind of slid right back into some of the same tendencies. And it's not just in theater, it's all over the place. I think that there's this idea of like, you know, we're trying to check a box and then move on. And there's not actual genuine consideration of what it means to, you know, bring in a full creative team of color and the support that they might need if they don't have the experience to correlate with how big of a project they're being asked to do. And, you know, what it looks like to bring in people who are underrepresented, but also just need more support in order to produce the same products that you may be used to getting from people who consistently get the opportunities.
Absolutely.
That's been quite disappointing, to be honest. Because I think during the pandemic, a lot of people were talking a very big game about the changes that we were going to see and the changes that we were going to experience. And I'm not seeing it, to be honest with you. Like, to an extent, like, there are things happening, but it's definitely not as expansive as I would have hoped that it would be.
That's really disappointing, to be honest. Yeah. Here. And, you know, if there was like one particular issue or thing, because I know there's multiple and, you know, they're kind of interlinked and there's no one real solution to these things usually. But mm-hmm. if there was one thing that if you had the power to change right now, right this second, can be a small thing, can be a big issue within the industry, what would that be?
I think the main thing I would give would be some sort of parental support from the union. If a birthing person needs to be gone from the show, some sort of maternity leave. We do receive a year, like, meaning we can have a year off where our jobs will not be given away, but there's no compensation. There is no outside of state support. There is nothing that's very specific to the job that we are doing that allows us to have some sort of financial support. And I think that would be a huge thing. There are a lot of things a lot of struggles that happen that make it really challenging. And then to add on top of it, to have the stress around, you know, your finances and insurance, which is not guaranteed to us after 6 months, which is crazy. It's a very, very, very difficult thing to navigate. And I just wish that there was a system in place that made it a little bit easier for people to start families.
Absolutely. And and I do hope some of that, at least some of that, you know, starts happening because, you know, to bring it back down to basics, which I feel like I don't even have to say, like, the happier you are in your personal life, the more it translates to your professional work, right?
100%.
So it's just a no-brainer. And, you know, before this, I was kind of saying that I used to live in London and, you know, I am European. So like all the, you know, everything I'm used to is kind of in a stark contrast to how it works in America, which is what I'm mm-hmm. learning, you know, mm-hmm. starting from like health insurance, like a lot of countries in Europe have free, you know, healthcare. So I was mm-hmm. like, what is this health insurance that I need to have? Mm-hmm. And also like, I'm still like, maybe this is too much information, but like, I'm still like scared to like go to the doctor here and knock on wood, I haven't had to because I'm like, how does it even work? And like, there's so many layers to it. And
that's so fair. And you shouldn't even be ashamed to admit that, because that is so real. Like, it is such a web that you jump into. And, you know, if you're fortunate enough to not have to jump into it, great. Because, you know, it's just even when you do have insurance, it is like a whole nother level of issues that you might possibly have to deal with still. And that's just not the way it should be.
Switching gears to Chicago the Musical, which has been running since 1996. What do you think is the magical ingredient there that makes it such a continued success?
I think it was so ahead of its time in so many ways, like in its mode of transportation for comedy, and its way that it showcases and features women. There was nothing like it at the time. And I feel like there still isn't anything like it. And so it really fits a niche that is so specific that I think that's what keeps people wanting to keep watching it over and over again and keeping it on Broadway for as long as it has been there.
For sure. And also, like, as an audience member, seeing a new cast or seeing a new Roxy or Velma, it's just a joy to keep revisiting it. And in terms of your kind of earliest or most memorable previous encounter with this material, do you have a story for me?
I had been introduced to a lot of the material when I started working with the Verdon Fosse legacy. And we had learned Hot Honey Rag during that time and learned a couple of pieces from the original Chicago, not from the one that is on Broadway right now. And that was kind of how I was introduced to a lot of the material. And I also just, you know, it's so iconic. And I think it's connected to so many memories for so many people. It's like really fun to perform it and look out in the audience and see people like mouthing the words and mouthing the monologues and stuff. And it's just, you know, it is such a specific part of musical theater history that is so cool.
Exactly. You know, you have been with the show since June, so not very long yet, but as you stay with a project, not just Chicago, but just looking at your career, how do you keep it fresh for yourself?
Because theater is a living and breathing thing, and because our bodies are constantly changing, our energies are changing, the experiences that we've had every day are changing, you can't help but be bringing something different just because of your humanity. You're going to bring something different every day. But I really feel specifically with the Fosse canon, even though Anne Reiking did this one, but it's heavily inspired by Bob Fosse's material. It is so expansive that it's impossible to do it the same every day, even every show. And so there's always something deeper that you can dig into and explore. And also too, I love to think about the perspective of the audience and how everybody that is seeing it for that particular moment is getting a different experience and a new experience. So it's my responsibility to bring 100% of what I have for that day. And so that constantly keeps me on my toes. But I really enjoy the Fosse language specifically because I feel like there is no mastery of it. And it's the perfect kind of style of dance for someone like me that is just constantly trying to get better.
For sure. And actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you're someone who actively chooses courage over comfort. You know, it's, for example, one of the examples that I have, like, is going from Broadway to being a Radio City Rockette, which, you know, is an interesting trajectory. So are you naturally drawn to trying new things, or is that something that you kind of have to push yourself to, okay, I need to jump in, I need to do this?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I do think recently, since I've had my son and coming back from the pandemic, that's been a major change for me in terms of like being a lot more willing to jump in head first, because I think my experiences outside of my home with my family, I want to feel like they are pushing me to be better because I want to instill that in my son. And I want him to be that way as well. And I want him to see his mom doing that. And so, yeah, I mean, that was a huge jumping into doing Rockettes was extremely terrifying for me. And I was very vocal about how scared I was of it. And there were a lot of things that I feel like coming back from the pandemic, I think I was constantly afraid. Every opportunity that sort of came my way was a scary one that I did not feel fully ready for. But there is a thrill to living life that way, because there's almost like a less of a reliance on yourself and more of a reliance on the benefits of growing. It's been very scary and extremely tumultuous. I mean, I'm still in that, even with Chicago and you know, other experiences that I've had, like in the past 3 years, I feel a lot less in control than I ever have before. But I'm really trying to lean into not resisting that and to accept that, because it hasn't really led me astray. It's been incredible, but everything I've stepped into has been something that I've not been quite sure that I could do.
So what drives you actually? Are you kind of driven by your heart, your head, your talent, your instincts, all of the above?
The main thing that drives me is passion, like just a love for the art, genuinely, because it's never been about how many jobs can I get and how many, you know, people can I be in front of. It's never been about that for me. It's always just been about the work. And so when I wake up every morning and I think about my day and what I'm going to be doing, typically it's all towards how I can bring a better Corey to the work. Whether that means that I am choosing to go take class, whether that means that I'm doing something for self-care, or recently I've really been leaning into like rest, because I've not been so great at that in the past. And I've been notorious for kind of pushing through a lot of things that are not great. And so I think I've over the past bit have really been trying to honor my body when it says that it needs to sit down and rest and not pushing through that. But I do think that all of those things contribute to then me being a better performer, because I can bring everything that I have when I'm there.
And you're so right. You know, it's like looking after your body. Like we were just saying, you know, you have to be in a good space physically as well as mentally to be able to obviously do your line of work. But, you know, going forward, as you do become even more established and respected in the industry, you know, do you have any, and I guess this ties together with the stuff we talked about previously about industry and changes, you know, do you have any prerequisites or aspects of a job that you'll specifically be looking for, or that will be a contributing factor in you taking on a job?
Totally. Respect is a huge thing. And I think being in rooms where there's a mutual respect and an honor of that is super important to me. I feel like for the most part, I feel so fortunate that I've been able to work with some incredible people who are not only so unbelievably talented, but who are so kind and loving and create spaces where I feel empowered as an artist to bring my best work to the table. And that is like a non-negotiable for me at this particular point, because the older I get, the more I understand how important that is. And I think when you're a young dancer in this industry, there's a lot of being made to feel like you are not really that special. And there's 5,000 other girls who are just like you, who can do the same thing you do. And to make you feel like you aren't deserving of having people treat you like a human being and having people treat you with the respect that you deserve. And I think, you know, the older that I've gotten, the more I'm like, no, that is what we deserve. We deserve to be able to be in spaces that are fruitful, where we can all do our best work. And I also just like really want to be inspired by the work. I think, again, like I'm open to so many different ways that can look. And I think the walls that and parameters that I used to set up for myself of like, it has to be this or it has to be that, don't really exist anymore, because I'm like, you know, maybe it's Rockettes, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Like, I'm okay with it looking different than what the status quo has been for me. But I want to be able to feel like the work challenges me.
That's a brilliant way to look at it. And I think I'm so excited to see what you do next. But as we're kind of entering the final quarter of 2023, I feel like there's been so many different things happening in your life. So what do you think is the one thing that stands out to you the most about this year in your life?
I am very viscerally feeling myself changing in a lot of ways this year, in ways that I could have never imagined. I mentioned previously, which anyone who knows me well, like is experiencing this in real time with me, me trying to really prioritize resting and rest space in my life. That is not the Corey that a lot of people know. It's not a Corey that I know. I'm like trying to get to know her as well, of like, who is this person that is also trying to take time for herself, trying to get clear about the type of things that I want to be a part of and all of that. And I have to take care of myself better, taking care of myself first versus taking care of myself last.
Yeah. And it's such a good reminder for all of us. And lastly, actually, I just want to acknowledge that we are in New York City, which, you know, is a wonderful place to be, even though it's like rainy and grim.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy today.
I know. But like, if someone had 24 hours to spend in New York City, what do you think one must see or do or visit in that time?
You must see a Broadway show. You must go to the Met. That is like, I think, a must see. I would say like, one thing that I wish I had done more of, and again, it's like something I'm trying to do more of now, is just to kind of let yourself get lost, because it's really such an incredible city to walk around and see. Like, you can be in completely different time periods between avenues, and you can meet so many different types of people. And it's just such an incredible, incredible city. And to be able to have nowhere specific to need to be, and to just sort of let yourself maneuver through all of these different neighborhoods, go to a different borough, experience some different types of food, just to be an explorer, I think is one of the greatest gifts that people who live in New York City, we don't often take advantage of, but because we typically stay in our same couple of blocks that we go to. But in those moments, I'm always reminded when I end up in a different neighborhood that I haven't been in a while, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. And like, how cool that this is like just a quick train ride away and I can do that. So I would really encourage someone to, you know, take a couple hours and just walk around and see what you find.
Yeah. And to appreciate how walkable it is, you know,
yeah,
just a practical point of view, but then also totally holistically, you know, like if you're able to walk around, like, and, you know, be happy and healthy, like just do it. Like, if it's a nice day out there, why not do that rather than sitting inside and just kind of moaning about things, you know?
Yeah. Do it while you can. It's not guaranteed. That's for sure.
Thank you guys so much for listening this week. If you enjoyed this episode, then please give us a follow on Instagram at Goodversations. And don't forget to share this episode to your Instagram stories. If you would like to hear more from us, then please follow us on Spotify and give us that 5-star rating, which helps us tremendously in securing more interviews for the show. Thank you again so much for joining me, and I will talk to you again soon.